Jacksonville City Council votes to advance the Lot J deal. More vaccine sites are coming as seniors across Florida struggle to access the shot. And a damning report is released on the JEA scandal. Some of the stories making headlines this week. Good Friday morning. We're live from Studio 5. I'm Melissa Ross, and this is First Coast Connect. Thanks for listening. Just ahead, all the top stories of the week with our Friday roundtable. Join us. It's 549-2937 to call in. Then later, it's a permanent home for Sunray Cinema's popular drive-in movies. We'll tell you about that. But first, it's Friday, and man, what a week in the news it's been. We're so pleased to have a great panel with us this morning, beginning with Ann Schindler of First Coast News. Hi, Ann.
Good morning. Hey, Melissa. How are you?
Great to have you. Chris Hong of the Florida Times Union is here. Hi, Chris. Good morning.
Good morning. Good morning, Melissa. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you. Writer, journalist Shelton Hull with us. Shelton, good morning.
Good morning. Happy New Year.
And rounding out the panel, Mike Mendenhall of the Jacksonville Daily Record. Hi, Mike.
Good morning, Melissa. Happy New Year, everybody.
Four all-stars on the show today, so buckle up and join us as we talk about the news. We'll go to your calls in a moment. It's 549-2937 to join us. Let's begin with the Lot J deal. Last night, the Jacksonville City Council voted yes in a supermajority vote to advance this controversial and very expensive deal between the City of Jax and Jaguars owner Shad Khan. Now, they also defeated several attempts to include more financially favorable terms for taxpayers on this massive public expenditure for the city. We're talking about hundreds of millions of dollars to develop Lot J, as it's known, the parking lot next to the football stadium. After a marathon meeting that lasted nearly 10 hours, the council approved the Lot J bill 15-4 in a vote that will move ahead to a final vote Tuesday. For the record, council members Al Ferraro, Matt Carlucci, Danny Becton, and Tommy Hazuri voted no. Let us know your thoughts about Lot J as our roundtable kicks off. 549-2937. Emails to firstcoastconnect@wjct.org. Tweets to @MelissaInJax. Chris Hong, let's begin with you. Four members voting no, but it's really not a surprise that this deal advanced. I think this was a foregone conclusion, as you and other reporters have noted. Still, though, it's not without a lot of controversy. This is the most expensive public-private partnership the city of Jax has likely ever decided to move forward with.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, you summed up the yesterday's developments pretty quick, you know, pretty well. Again, no real surprises. I don't think anyone expected this deal to ever be in jeopardy of not passing. Something else that did happen at the meeting yesterday was a man named Tarek Bate. I hope I didn't butcher his name. Mm-hmm. He's a commercial real estate professional, and he gave a presentation to the council about what he believed to be were four, you know, fundamental red flags about the project, and what simple ways, as he described it, to, you know, address some of these concerns. The biggest concern that he raised was just the lack of any information that the developers have provided the city. And when I say information, like pro forma information mm-hmm. that you'd have to provide to a bank to get money, about the project's cost, about the market for it. He just said, I mean, I think the quote was, the public and the city has been deprived of an opportunity to have a real discussion about, you know, some of the numbers behind this project. Go ahead.
Yeah. Ann Schindler, the public hasn't liked this deal. They feel it hasn't been thoroughly vetted. And they also, according to the polling we've seen, they feel the city rolled over for the NFL. They would like to see the city have the Jaguars commit to a longer term lease at TIAA Bank Field. They'd like to see more home games in Jacksonville, fewer in London. This isn't going over well with taxpayers or football fans.
Right. Well, I think your initial point there is very valid. I mean, this has not been vetted. You know, we don't know what the market is. We don't know whether this project's going to succeed. We don't know that the model in other cities has been mixed. It's an enormous amount of money in a city with so many priorities and it hasn't been looked at in that way. I mean, through the mayor's lens and through the Jaguars' lens, it's just like this or nothing, as opposed to this or possibly solving some of the more critical problems in the city with $500 million that we're going to, you know, spend in one fell swoop and borrow to spend. So the financials on it are not fully vetted in terms of how that will pan out for taxpayers, but it's also, just a question of priority.
Right. Shelton Hall, if we weren't in the middle of a pandemic and a deep recession, this might not have been quite as controversial.
Probably not. I think that there's been a little bit of resistance on the council and in the community, but they're really playing at pushback. What we've seen traditionally in the city is that what the Jaguars want, the Jaguars get. What Shad Khan wants, Shad Khan gets. And, as we've seen with other public initiatives that we'll talk about later, the concerns over lack of transparency, lack of fair market value, concerns about whether this project can even be completed, these are all legitimate concerns, but I think that the ship has already pretty much sailed. And, perhaps as we get closer to the 2022-2023 election, we might have a little bit more pushback from council on this, but I would assume that it's a done deal to whatever extent the deal can actually be done.
Mike Mendenhall, you've been covering this from the start. Let's talk about the deal and what we can expect once it's all approved and once dirt starts turning at Lot J. What are the taxpayers going to get for their money?
Well, the development itself has been kind of shrinking over since it was first discussed last year. But as of right now, there's going to be what's called a live arena. It's about 100,000 square feet. It's going to have like an open entertainment space with bars and restaurants and those kind of things surrounding it. And then there's going to be also a 75,000 square foot live district, which will be ground floor retail. And other shops and restaurants. The commercial office space that was originally proposed for the development has shrunk to about 35,000 square feet, which the Jaguars actually say is going to be office space for their Gecko Investments, their development arm. There's also going to be a minimum 120 room hotel, and then two mid-rise apartment complexes with a total of a minimum of 350 apartments. And then there's also parking, and that parking will be 600 spaces in a parking garage, and then 600 spaces in a surface lot. Now, the city is actually going to retain ownership. Would actually retain ownership of the live portion of it, so the live arena, the live district, and then the rest of the infrastructure like the parking, and that's where the public-private partnership is come into play. But there have been concerns that because the city is going to own half of this infrastructure, if the Lot J deal doesn't go through or the Jaguars leave, that the city could be stuck with a lot of infrastructure that could be difficult to pass off to someone else.
What about Chris Hong, the no votes? Al Ferraro, Matt Carlucci, Danny Becton, and Tommy Hazuri voting no on this. One of those members in particular, Matt Carlucci, is seen as having mayoral aspirations. Are they seeing a political constituency in saying no to this deal?
I can't really assign motives to people, but, they have been, highly critical of this deal and have been calling for more, changes that would be more favorable to taxpayers and city from a financial standpoint since the beginning. So, in Carlucci and Hazuri's case, they've both proffered what they would think would be solutions to, their concerns about the deal. Those were both shot down yesterday, and they've been shot down throughout the process. So, not a huge surprise that, neither of them would support it in the end.
It's our Friday Media Roundtable. We want to get your thoughts about the Lot J deal. It's practically a done deal. Lots of you are waiting on hold, meanwhile, to talk about the riots at the Capitol Wednesday and our local congressional delegation's response to that. We're going to jump to that in a moment. But first, let us know about Lot J. Where do you stand? 549-2937. Curtis on the north side. Hi, Curtis.
Good morning, Melissa. You know I love you. Melissa, I would like, first of all, to say every city council member that voted yes should be investigated to see if there is some under-the-table deal they got to approve that.
Now, why do you think they got that?
Well, because, Melissa, come on, you know how they do. Look at what we got in the White House right now. You know there are under-the-table deals go on all the time. So please, let's not be naive as to why this is going forward when Jacksonville has a million other problems that money should be put towards. And on top of that, with Rutherford and people like him, everyone in Congress, locally or statewide, that stood by and said nothing, answered and openly supported this guy in office, should be put out of their job. Point blank.
We'll get to that in just a bit, Curtis, and thanks for calling. Okay, Ann Schindler. Yeah, go ahead, Curtis.
Shaka has the money to do whatever he want to do. Man, we got more important things that the citizen need done on instead of investing in an area that is not guaranteed to bring what they are promising us. How can they guarantee jobs and all that when we can't even deal with COVID vaccines and this diseases out here? This is insane to me.
Curtis, I think a lot of voters agree with you out there. I appreciate your thoughts. Thank you, Curtis. Ann Schindler, there's no proof anyone at the city council was bribed to go ahead on Lot J. I understand Curtis's cynicism, but let's be clear. There's no evidence of that. That said, there was certainly a lot of pressure on them to vote this way.
Yeah. I mean, you know, it was interesting. Rory Diamond, city councilman, he put out an amendment that passed that basically says, you know, nobody from the council or, you know, their dependents can benefit from this project, you know, in order to limit the optics that there might be some sort of, you know, employment offer or something down the road. But, you know, to that point, this group of people who objected to the proposal did not include the core city minority access district council members who, you know, a short while ago on the steps of City Hall stood up to say that they were demanding some infrastructure remedies and improvements if this project went forward. And this project did include this fund that's been set aside for East Side infrastructure redevelopment improvement in the years ahead. And so there, you know, that's not a bribe, but there definitely is a quid pro quo. And the reason that support was, you know, available to the majority was because this group of minority access district city council members set up the threshold for what they would require in order to support it.
Steve on the west side. Go ahead, Steve. Go ahead and turn your radio down, Steve, and go ahead.
I've got my radio off.
Okay.
Yeah, my name is Steve. I've lived in Jacksonville since 1962 in the west side of Jacksonville. And I've followed local politics, been active, you know, did everything a good citizen should do. And this whole debacle with Lot J just appalls me as a taxpaying citizen. Obviously, the citizens of Jacksonville, the polls show the taxpayers in Jacksonville don't want this Lot J project. Our Jacksons against this project. Letters were written to Roger Goodell of the NFL. And yet, the city council, just like typical government, they know best. The thing that I feel like is that the city council and the mayor, they look at the taxpayers in Jacksonville like they were their children, and those people were the adults. And they know what's best for us.
Yeah. Steve,
and
thanks.
That's a childish example, but
I hear you, Steve. I think that's why this is sticking in the craw of a lot of voters. Thank you for that, Steve, on the west side. Shelton, that has been a source of resentment for constituents contacting their local representative and basically being told, we know best. That has not gone down well with the taxpayers.
Well, you know, that's too bad for the taxpayers. What's going to be done is going to be done. And, you know, we talk about, you know, graft and corruption and bribery. And, you know, I don't want to be too cynical about it, but I think folks that harp on that too much don't seem to grasp that, you know, running large companies like cities is a fundamentally corrupt thing. You look at Atlanta, you look at Miami, you look at New Orleans, Orlando, they're doing deals like this on a fairly yearly basis, and you don't see anyone really walking away saying that they didn't get their money's worth. If there was graft and bribery and corruption, at least this whole thing would function in a somewhat more logical way. The Lot J thing is a good idea in theory. Fixing infrastructure is good in theory. Reducing crime in theory is good in theory, but the fundamental issue that all this stuff revolves around is the fact that the taxpayers and the citizens of this city have not figured out a way to actually assert their own authority within this process. The taxpayers are acting like employees instead of acting like they're the bosses. It's the same with the football team. I've said that part of this deal should entail not just, you know, the Jaguars committing to stay here for a while, but the city of Jacksonville should buy at least like a 10% ownership stake in the team. That way you can keep them here. But that's never, you can assure that they'll stay here, but that's never going to happen because for this city, and you can see this all around the league that, you know, avoids that sort of thing, the threat of removing your team and taking your team out of the city is always used by sports teams, particularly in the NFL, every year, every time there's a need to negotiate something, negotiate a contract, negotiate a lease agreement, or anything like that. The deal itself, the structure of it, you know, makes sense in theory, but as we've already seen, only four council people voting against this thing, you know, and this is at the very early stages. If you're getting 15 to 4 votes on this, you know, the subsequent votes on later stages of this project are almost a fait accompli, as they say. We've seen what they're capable of.
And, you know, whether you like the deal or not, as Shelton points out, ultimately it's up to the voters to reelect your representative or seek another candidate or run yourself if you don't like the deal. We do live in a democracy, so let us know your thoughts about that. But we have so many people waiting on hold to talk about what happened in Washington Wednesday that we're going to move on to that. This is the latest on the fallout from the Capitol Hill riots. 5 people are now dead after pro-Trump extremists stormed the Capitol building Wednesday, including a Capitol police officer. More than 100 members of the GOP caucus in the House continued to raise objections to the Electoral College certification of President-elect Joe Biden and VP-elect Kamala Harris, even as the mob was storming the Capitol. Our local congressman, Republican Representative John Rutherford, has now recognized Biden as president-elect after raising the objections. Still, that wasn't enough to placate a group of local protesters who descended on Rutherford's Jacksonville office yesterday afternoon and called on him to resign. And do we have the cut from that? No, we don't have that. Basically, protesters said that the congressman ignored the will of the people and signed on to craziness. Mike Mendenhall, a St. Augustine man, was one of 14 people arrested by Capitol Police during that storming of Capitol Hill Wednesday. It's John Anderson of St. Augustine. He's accused of unlawful entry into the U.S. Capitol building. Federal authorities are seeking dozens of other rioters. This has just been an unbelievable series of events in this country.
Yeah, Melissa. I mean, you watch what was unfolding, and it's unprecedented. And I'm kind of at a loss for words just because, you know, when you're watching, you know, a large group of people storming the United States Capitol building, I mean, it's something that you never would think you would see in your lifetime. And it was disappointing to see too that, you know, before this mob stormed the Capitol, the President of the United States, you know, standing at the podium with the presidential seal addressing this group, you know, kind of riling them up and building their energy. And it really it sent a signal to them that he had no intent to concede. Now, of course, since then, you know, he after he was blocked from Twitter Twitter and Facebook. He came back on and condemned the actions and says that President Trump says he's going to commit to an orderly transition of power. But he hasn't quite he still hasn't conceded or congratulated President-elect Biden.
Here now is the cut from yesterday's rally outside Congressman Rutherford's Jacksonville office. Protesters there assembled and encouraged Representative Rutherford to resign.
Rutherford ignored the will of the people here. He signed on to this craziness, and he and all the other House of Representatives and senators who are backing Trump are culpable for these four deaths and this insurrection that happened yesterday. He's disgraced his office. He needs to step down.
Chris Hong, Representative Rutherford, essentially doubled down on his objections in an interview this week with our local CBS affiliate, saying that he was simply raising objections to the election results in, I believe it was Arizona, citing court documents. However, those court documents have all been thrown out as baseless. There is no widespread proof of voter fraud in the swing states. There simply is not.
Yeah, no, correct. I mean, yeah, everything he said is correct. And as far as the calls for him to step down or resign or take ownership of what happened, I wouldn't hold your breath on that.
Right. Ann Schindler, you know, Congressman Rutherford is going to be up again for election in 2022. After what we've seen happen this week, he and other representatives around the country will certainly have to run on this record. They will be challenged from the left and the right, depending on how extreme supporters of President Trump view their loyalty to this president.
Yeah, I think the challenge from the left is going to be the thing to watch going forward. This last election cycle was the first time in my memory where there was a truly funded, viable opponent for that safe seat in Donna Deegan. And she didn't win, and I don't think a lot of political observers expected that she'd win. But it is energizing for Democrats to see a candidate, to see a viable candidate, to see somebody that at least is pushing back and making that a seat that requires the energy of the person running for it. And you saw in a strange shift that, you know, John Rutherford was campaigning on health care. He was campaigning on the environment, which, I mean, that's not been done. So I think in the past, you know, what people like John Rutherford have done have tried to keep their seat safe because they know that it all comes down to the primary. And so they're running against people, you know, farther right and more extreme. And in a safe district like this that's been gerrymandered, you know, he's only vulnerable to the people more extreme right than he is. But I think that Georgia, I think that the, you know, Gillum election that he lost for governor but came close, I think that the recent presidential race shows that there is a shift in the voting demographic in this area. And so I do think it's going to change how he runs and how other lawmakers run for office.
Lots of calls as we go to Mark and Murray Hill right now. Go ahead, Mark.
Hey, just real quick, I was thinking about this, and I was thinking about what truly motivated these people and trying to put into context what their gripes were. And I think, generally speaking, what they're basically saying is they don't like reality. And the examples are the COVID virus. At first, there was a thing where the COVID virus was, according to them, was a conspiracy somehow. Well, sorry, it's here. The election that the election was supposedly this massive conspiracy in places only where Democrats won, where Republicans won, there was no problem with the election system. But in places only where Democrats won, there was some sort of fraud. Again, they don't like reality. Math is made. You start adding things up. I'm sorry, math is a concrete thing. 2 + 2 = 4. I know that you wish, some of these people wish it equals 5, but it doesn't. It equals 4. I know it would be great for them if it turned out to be true that Hillary Clinton was eating little kids, which is what these people actually believe, these QAnon people actually believe. But unfortunately, there's absolutely no evidence that any of that is true. Other than shutting down social media, I don't think there's any way to mitigate what people think, that if they want to believe in some fantasy world. I don't think there's any way to change it. However, when public officials sign off on this craziness, despite the fact that there's no evidence that any of it is true, I believe it's criminal. And by the way, John Rutherford, who is a supposedly was this great lawman, was one of the first people, apparently, according to him, to leave the floor of the House and was cowering in his office while these poor policemen were trying to defend themselves against this angry mob of lunatics. So not only is he guilty, as far as I'm concerned, of perpetuating this nonsense and being part of the cause of it, he's also a coward. And so thanks for taking my call.
Shelton Hall, you know, it's almost beyond words to contemplate that five people are dead after a mob stormed the Capitol, ginned up and riled up by lies peddled by the president, the pro-Trump media ecosystem, and hundreds of our elected officials who either genuinely believe these lies or cynically decided to go along with the big lie in order to stay in favor within their caucus. We have to be honest and straightforward about this. These were lies. The election was free and fair. Dozens of court challenges were brought, and they have all been thrown out. There is no proof that can stand up in a court of law to show that there was any funny business with the election. And so, it was so tragic to see this deplorable, I shouldn't use the word deplorable, that's a politically loaded term, this horrible scene at the Capitol Wednesday. It was heartbreaking to see this happen.
Yeah, and worse is coming in the days and weeks ahead. You know, it is very sad what happened. This sort of thing happens all around the world, but only in America are we really still kind of surprised by this. If you want to take it back a little bit, the beta testing for this was done back in May in Lansing, Michigan. A bunch of protesters stormed the Capitol building in Lansing, Michigan in protest of the lockdown restrictions. Same methodology, surrounding the building, getting people up at windows, banging on the doors, busting through windows, and then trying to penetrate the actual interior of the building. And in that case, as we saw the Capitol, they were able to get in. What we know now is that Capitol Police allowed dozens of people with unchecked and unsecured backpacks to get onto the floor of the Capitol. We know that Congress people were staffers were up in the balcony or hiding in their, you know, in the corridors of the building. We know that Congress people were evacuated to take shelter in their offices, but then the protesters were able to make it as far as the offices. They were able to get onto the desk of the Secret Service, of the Speaker of the House. They were able to look at her computers. And then after that, the congressional leadership was taken away to some unsecured place where we didn't even know where they were until after, we didn't hear a word from them until after the curfew had set in. And so Lansing, Michigan was one step. This was, again, you know, I'm not saying that there's any conspiracy or that there's anyone driving this or directing this and that, you know, it's just, but people are sort of moving in a similar direction. It's already been announced that on January 17th, self-styled patriots will be marching on Capitol buildings in all 50 states or as many of the 50 states as they can muster. January 20th is the inauguration. Joe Biden and Kamala Harris, they're going to be sworn in mostly remotely. It won't be the kind of large, you know, large inauguration ceremony that we are used to having in Washington. And we may never have something like that again in this country because those things cannot be secured. You can't have Biden and Harris out there in front of like audiences at this point because we've seen that they can't be protected. Anyone can be touched, despite the best efforts of security. Now, the upside to this is we saw the amount of political capital that the president lost in just a matter of hours was spectacular. I don't think any American politician, not even Richard Nixon, lost so much support so quickly. You know, this administration's had more turnover than like Stalin, but in recent days we've seen people like Elaine Chao, Betsy DeVos, Bill Barr, people who were
resigning.
Dying in the wool.
Yeah,
resigning, like the most hardened loyalist. The fact that those people will float away from Trump, that creates that sort of good news for the people who might be wanting to challenge Rutherford or Ron DeSantis in 2022. Without the White House there to support them, they will be vulnerable. And, you know, I could see someone like Donna Deegan going after him again. But hopefully, you know, hopefully all these people that were out there protesting Rutherford's office the other day, hopefully those people actually vote next time. Hopefully they go and knock on some doors for whoever challenges him, because now you have this opportunity.
We should note that last night in Amelia Island at the Ritz-Carlton, former UN ambassador, former member of Trump's cabinet, Nikki Haley, criticized the president over the Capitol riots. She is seen as a potential 2024 presidential contender. So is Florida Governor Ron DeSantis, who is going to be speaking at the RNC winter meeting at the Ritz-Carlton, we're told, tonight. That's in our area. Rusty on the west side. Hi, Rusty. Thanks for holding for quite some time. Go ahead.
Yes. Good morning, Melissa. Happy New Year, panel.
Happy New Year.
Melissa, thank you. We don't have kings or glorious leaders here in the United States. That's the spirit of 76. So with the Trump phenomenon now officially in the rearview mirror, what did Trump's mob really want on a more practical basis? They wish to overturn the Internal Revenue Service. They wish to sweep away vestiges of the welfare state. And who was the biggest reformer in that regard was a guy named Bill Clinton. And thirdly, they wish to oppose China on a broad front and other nations like that. All of these things, more practically, are up for discussion in a democracy. A mistake that Trump made was he had no manifesto really to hold up before the cameras. Maybe he could have pasted all of his tweets together starting in 2016 and held that up. But there's no version of Mein Kampf or Mao's Little Red Book or Das Kapital. He had no movement as a pretend despot. He had no movement like that, and I'll take it off the air.
Rusty, thank you. Meanwhile, lots of tweets. Cindy tweets the show, no politician should be able to hide behind their incredulous surprise that this happened. Those of us listening to Trump's rhetoric leading up to the election were bracing for this violence and craziness. Another tweet, what actions can be taken by Congress to hold the president accountable? There is talk, Mike Mendenhall, of another effort at impeachment of President Trump, although he is in office for less than two more weeks. And so we'll have to wait and see if anything comes of that. It would be difficult to execute that in the time frame that's left.
Yeah, and even if the House Democrats could get together, and vote on impeachment within the next 12 days, I mean, it'd be largely ceremonial. I mean, the U.S. Senate, even though there are a few Republican senators in recent days who have come out to denounce Trump's behavior, it's very unlikely that he would be thrown out of office. And there also has been talk about invoking the 25th Amendment, which would require the vice president and the cabinet members to all agree to removing the president from office. And that's not happened in our history. And although Mike Pence appears, Vice President Pence appears to have been communicating with many of the cabinet members over the last several days, while the president has been kind of, you know, I don't want to use the term incapacitated, but has not been not been very visible other than his speech to the group of mob and protesters. He doesn't appear he's really making any steps to invoke that amendment.
Tony in Middleburg, go ahead, Tony.
Hi. As far as and I haven't listened to the whole show, but I understand there's a lot of people today wondering how this could have happened this week. The storming of the Capitol, it shouldn't be a surprise, certainly not with Trump. We've known that he's the type of person for more than 5 years that would do something like this or get the events in set in motion. But this has been festering since the end of the Civil War, when the Confederacy was sent home and allowed to institute Jim Crow for a long time just in the South. But it's now spread throughout the entire country. In every state and every walk of life, you have people that basically have the same principles that the old Confederacy has had as far as their thoughts on race and things of that nature. And while we all have biases and some of us have prejudices, we tame them based on what we know to be the Constitution and what we think the American lifestyle is going to be. Trump supporters, and I believe all 70 million of them, don't feel that way. They feel that they're entitled to put upon the rest of America their point of view. This week was just, I think, the end of the beginning of the insurgency. I think you're going to see more of it. I hate to say this, but I don't see any way that we're going to avoid a second civil war at this point. It's not going to be where...
Well, let's hope not, Tony. Red and blue are all jumbled up together. We're not geographically separated as we were in the Civil War. We have to find a way to live together.
Well, let me ask you a question. Do you think you're going to be able to negotiate or talk reasonably with someone who denies science? Do you think you could talk reasonably and negotiate with someone from Al-Qaeda or ISIS? And while they're not as violent as those two groups are today, their principles are the same, that they will die for what they believe in or what they're told by their leader. It's not going to be red and blue and we meet on a battlefield. It's going to be the same type of guerrilla civil wars that we see in other countries.
I really hope you're wrong, Tony.
I do too.
And I want to thank you for your call. And look, I mean, we have to find a way to live together as Americans. We just simply have to.
Right. Melissa, I would point out, too, I mean, a war is not an end in itself, right? So we had a civil war, we'd still at some point have to find a way to live together, you know? And we could avoid a lot of bloodshed if we do that at the front end.
That's right, Anne. Thank you for that. You know, before we wrap it up, I want to make note of one other very important story from the week. COVID cases continue to skyrocket around the state. We hit a single day record of nearly 20,000 new cases yesterday. And Chris Hong, amidst this, Mayor Curry and the city of Jax have announced plans for additional vaccination sites. This is welcome news, as seniors in particular are frantically trying to make an online appointment, Chris, to get the vaccine. And they're having trouble even accessing the online system because there's so much demand.
Yeah, no, that's right. Last week saw a huge flood of demand to get this vaccine. Phone lines were overwhelmed. And the city is kind of stepping up to do what they can to facilitate the distribution of it. But, you know, there's only so much they can do. At the end of the day, it's the state that determines, you know, how much of the vaccine that each county gets. And so if you only have a limited amount of vaccines, you can only give it to so many people.
That's right. Mike Mendenhall, more than 2,000 new cases in our area alone, another 164 dead overnight from the virus. Mayor Curry this week saying that the city is working as fast as they can to get more vaccination sites opened. We've heard that at the Prime Osborne, seniors, you know, haven't had a place to sit down, use the restroom while they're waiting in long lines to get the vaccine. This has been a rocky rollout all over the state.
Yeah, and I mean, we're seeing these type of supply issues across the country. Dr. Anthony Fauci's been making his rounds on national media, you know, talking about how, you know, Project Warp Speed of the federal government, you know, is behind the curve as to the number of vaccinations they wanted to get done by this time. The city of Jacksonville, I mean, one thing that you know, if the supply level increases, one thing the city does have going for it is the fact that they have established a lot of testing sites around Duval County. So, you know, if that supply increases, I mean, they could transition more of those sites, you know, into vaccination centers. So there is that, but like what Chris said, you know, you only can work with the supply that you have.
That's right. Shelton, it's a last mile problem, getting the supply to the people that need it. This is going to continue for a while.
Absolutely. You know, it would have been nice if maybe we'd spent the past year before the vaccine arrived, sort of preparing for what we would do once the vaccine did arrive. It's ironic. I thought it was ironic that we called it Operation Warp Speed when in fact it's going at a glacial pace, but maybe there's just a bit of humor about it. It's the federal government hasn't provided much leadership on this. The state government has been iffy. They've had their own things to deal with. Our local government's done a pretty good job with what they've been given.
Yeah.
No,
we lost him. Go ahead. We'll try to fix that connection, Shelton. Ann Schindler, let's close with your thoughts. Whether people are in Duval, Nassau, St. John's, Putnam, Flagler counties, they need to go to their county health department website. And basically, the only advice we can give people is keep trying to get in. Keep trying to make the appointment.
Yeah, and you know the frustrating part, I think, for a lot of people and observers is that this new contingent of people trying to get vaccines are 65 and older. And that is, for people who are particularly at the end of that age group, you know, in their late 80s and 90s, some people don't have internet access, some people don't have, you know, computers or aren't super skilled at using them. And so, you know, it's a high bar for them when that is the only way to just sit at their computer all day and try to, you know, use systems that they're not familiar with to get an appointment. Of course, they fill up very quickly, too, so it's been very frustrating for those who get on right away and try. I can't tell you how many hundreds of calls we've gotten at the station from people who are just desperate for, you know, help and really feeling adrift.
That's right. We have as well. And so once again, if you're having trouble and you're not internet savvy, have someone try to help you. Go to your county's health department website. Don't try to call for the appointment. Try to make the online appointment. We understand the frustration and how difficult this is. You're just going to have to keep trying. I so wish we had a better answer for all the seniors out there, but this is the latest information that we have. Quick disclaimer, opinions expressed on the Friday Media Roundtable and those of the panelists do not necessarily reflect the views of WJCT News. We want to thank Chris Hong, Ann Schindler, Mike Mendenhall, and Shelton Hall. Thanks so much, everyone, for joining us. Have a great weekend, and we'll see you soon.
Thanks, Melissa.
Thanks, Melissa.
Thanks, all. All right, a quick break, and in a moment, why drive-in movies are here to stay in Jacksonville as Sunray Cinema expands with a permanent drive-in location. We'll speak to the owner right after this. You're listening to First Coast Connect on WJCT News 89.9.
Wayne Hogan of the Terrell Hogan Law Firm.
I'm Wayne Hogan. A company's cell phone policy can protect your employees and your bottom line. Our distracted driving presentation for the workforce can help.
Learn more at waynehogan.law.
Congarean Pen, dedicated to agriculture and culinary endeavors, offering field-to-fork dining and outdoor experiences on over 300 acres. Sip, dine, explore. Information at congareeandpen.com.
Taxes, the environment, energy, education, healthcare, a state that's gaining nearly 1,000 new residents every day, and the ongoing quest for resources to meet that growing need. These are critical issues that affect everyone in Florida, and they're just some of the issues we follow every week on Capitol Report. It's your direct connection to what's going on in Tallahassee and what it means to you.
Tonight at 6:30 on WJCT News 89.9.
This week on Science Friday, we'll chew on mind-boggling physics with Nobelist Frank Wilczek, plus fossils in Antarctica deepen the mystery of an ancient giant bird.
So if you think of an albatross on steroids with teeth, you're actually in the right ballpark for getting a mental picture of this group.
It's all on Science Friday from WNYC Studios.
This afternoon at 3 here on WJCT News 89.9.
As promised, they came. And incited by the president, they attacked.
Take that house! Take it now! Take it now!
President Trump still has not conceded, but he has now acknowledged his term in office will soon be over. We'll wrap up what's been a disturbing week on the Friday News Roundup next time on 1A.
Today, starting at 10 on WJCT News 89.9.
Welcome back. Well, Sunray Cinema, which has hosted pop-up drive-in movies at several locations around town throughout the COVID pandemic, has decided the time is right to create a permanent drive-in theater in Jacksonville. This is really exciting news. Co-owner Shana David Massett is on the line to tell us all about it. Hey, good morning.
Good morning.
So good to have you on the show. So you and your co-owner, husband Tim, have decided to go into the drive-in movie theater business. This comes after you've been doing these ad hoc drive-ins to keep everyone safe during the pandemic so that they could still go out and enjoy a movie. Tell us about this new effort. What's it going to be like?
Sure. It's an extension of what we love, love, love to do, which is get people together to go to the movies. And we didn't stop, right, when we had our whole lives impacted by the safety of being indoors in groups. We said, well, let's get outside. And so we started them in May to just keep our staff moving, keep our brand going, and most importantly, to keep providing that service to the community. And it looks like it's not going anywhere, the concept of drive-in movies being a way that people feel really, really comfortable in doing some. So we are beefing up our operations with a piece of dirt, as Archer calls it, and with the trailer. I'm so excited by selling our popcorn and our hot dogs and our veggie dogs to start and building from there. It's super exciting.
Now, this is going up at 859-869 Willow Branch Avenue, right on the border of Murray Hill and Riverside. A big screen, people will be able to access the soundtrack right through their FM radio, right? All the typical stuff. So this is bringing back a very old tradition in America into the 21st century. I guess that's a silver lining to this pandemic. We're getting back to some old school activities, but in a 21st century way.
I think that's a good way to describe it. And I think what's especially unique about this operation is, as compared to our previous pop-ups, as compared to a lot of the pop-ups that folks are doing around the country, what we're able to do with the 21st century technology that we're investing in is play brand new movies. So we are all pumped about seeing the Goonies, but there's only so many times we're all going to come out for the Goonies. So now, here we are in 2021, as new films are being released over the coming weeks, and there are some fantastic ones on our lineup. I'm especially excited about Psycho Gorman. Oh, my goodness. As these new films are released, we're now going to have a drive-in to play them at.
What are you screening? You have a screenings this weekend. Tell us about that.
Sure. So screenings tonight, Friday, are sold out already, which is crazy. Wonder Woman 84 and The Goonies tonight. And then we've got a few tickets left tomorrow for Wonder Woman 84. Spirited Away is sold out. And then we had to add another screening of Spirited Away next weekend. So we're aiming for every Friday and Saturday night for the next couple of weeks, with that schedule being posted on our website as it emerges.
Okay. Now, the permanent drive-in will go in the Metro Entertainment Complex. That's one of the city's oldest continuously operating bars to serve the LGBTQ community. This will be the first permanent Jacksonville drive-in since 2008, when the Playtime drive-in on Blanding Boulevard closed. It had been in operation for 60 years. So, you know, this is exciting to see this coming back to town. What else? When do you anticipate to have this permanent setup ready?
Over the next couple of weeks, we are receiving delivery of our big projection trailer. It'll now be the second trailer I own. I've learned so much about hooking up trailers and unhooking trailers. It's fantastic. And so, you know, this is not a pivot for us, right? We've been showing movies forever and ever, especially Tim in this town. But learning how to fill up a water tank in a trailer is a brand new thing for us.
Yeah.
We're receiving delivery on just the coolest thing I have ever seen, which is a projection trailer that's built out by a couple of furloughed Disney Imagineers. It has a projection booth that kind of lifts up out of the top of it. It's just fantastic. So that should be here in the next couple of weeks.
How exciting. In the meantime, we don't want to put people off from going to the traditional Sunray Cinema in Five Points, which remains open.
We don't. Thank you so much. It's been an interesting thing hearing how it unfolds. People assume, well, you're having a pop-up. That means that the regular theater is closed. Oh, no. Since August, we've been operating at a 30% capacity, and it is a really, really great place to be in that theater together and feeling as safe as you can with all the precautions that we've taken place to avoid serving as a vector for the spread of COVID-19. So don't forget about it. And that's not going anywhere. That's the other question I hear. Well, does that mean now you're closing the Five Points operation? No, we are not. That's staying open. And this being in this same area, we're expecting some real synergy between the two operations.
Really exciting. We need some good news. So it's great to have you on the show. She's Sunrise Cinema co-owner Shana David-Massett. Look for their new drive-in, permanent drive-in movie theater later this year. Kudos, Shana. Thank you.
Hey, thank you, Melissa. Take it easy.
All right. That's our show today. Thanks to all of our guests and callers and tweeters and emailers. Our producer is Heather Schatz. Josh Torres is show director alongside Brady Corum today. Our news director is Jessica Palumbo. Bill Bortsfield is our digital editor. Keep those emails coming. We appreciate your feedback. Send them to firstcoastconnect@wjct.org. And make sure to join us today at noon for the Florida Roundup, our live statewide call-in program, rounding up the biggest stories across Florida. We'll look at efforts to roll out the COVID vaccine statewide today at noon. I'm Melissa Ross. This is First Coast Connect on WJCT News, 89.9 Jacksonville. Have a great Friday, everyone.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.